we know what they need, right? They need a lot of imaginative play. They need to be able to be creative. They need a lot of time to process emotions, experiences. They're really learning about the world around them. And they're learning how to do like nonverbal cues, like facial expressions, and just really play. Like play is their work. Just those are the kinds of things that they miss out on when they're on a screen. What happens is then we have this habit loop where then the child is like, okay, I feel bad. So what do I need to do to feel better? I need to turn to a screen.
My guest today on the Healthy Parenting Handbook is Andrea Davis, founder of Better Screen Time. And Andrea and I have worked together for quite a few years now. In fact, she is about to become a three-time returning camp leader in the Life Skills Now summer camp. We had Andrea on in season one with an amazing parent track workshop on tech training wheels. She also talked to teens in that season in a session called Choosing What Matters to You, Not Your Device. It's Your Choice. We had her back in season two, where she talked to kids about ages 8 and up about how to get their parents off their cell phones. That was a very popular workshop, and it was really all about creating a family tech plan. And then this year, season three in 2024, she is back with a workshop on making time for things you love by managing your time online. So if you've ever wished that you could have some help teaching your kids self-discipline, and the ability to cut off those screens and stop doing what they're doing and go do something else, Andrea is going to teach directly to them, kids ages 8 and up. If you are listening to this anytime before June 24th, 2024, run, do not walk, to our registration for Life Skills Now Season 3. It is all about slow tech, low tech, and no tech. How do we use our screens for productive good instead of passive scrolling? Watch a quick workshop and then get off those screens and implement in the real world. So Andrea has been an incredible camp leader. This is her third year back, her fourth workshop. We're so honored. And I am also so honored to introduce her to you for this Healthy Parenting Handbook podcast. We have a big topic today. We have a big topic because we're talking about screen use. And I say all the time, like there's no parenting handbook. But particularly when it comes to screens, not only is there no parenting handbook, there's no precedent because we didn't even get to watch our parents struggle with these questions. We have to make everything up and we need mentors desperately. And I cannot wait to introduce you to Andrea Davis because she is going to be the best tech mentor you can ask for as a parent. Andrea, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Katie. I'm super excited to be here with you.
Well, I mean, this is going to be really good. I don't know how we're not going to go for like 90 minutes, but I promise folks we will. We will not go for 90 minutes, but if we do, it would be that good that you would listen to the whole thing. Official introduction. Andrea Davis is a former secondary ed teacher turned screen time navigator. She's the founder of Better Screen Time, where she shares family tested ideas from the tech trenches as a mom of five. So lots of test subjects. Good job, Andrea.
Yeah.
She's on a mission to help parents worry less about tech and connect more with their kids. Who doesn't want that? Andrea and her husband, Tyler, live in beautiful Hood River, Oregon, where they love spending time outdoors as a family. And so when you go to Better Screen Time, you get to see lots of gorgeous scenery and pictures of kids hiking. It's great. So Andrea, I got to tell you, I mean, personally, this is a topic near and dear to my heart as a mom of a 16-year-old who started driving this year, a 13-year-old who just got her like cell phone this year, and a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. Like I'm totally in that tech trench. And it's one of those things that like ebbs and flows on my worry meter. Mm-hmm. And my worry meter was turned very, very high this weekend because my kids did a dance benefit concert for an organization called Women at Risk or WAR. And the speaker was talking about human trafficking, not a subject I'm very familiar with. And she threw out the statistic that 300,000 children in America are involved in human trafficking every year. And some of it begins with being online. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Like 300,000. I was blown away. She could have stopped talking there and I would have written her the check. But I was also like, okay. Time to reassess, reevaluate, and make sure that I am making the right choices. So this could not be at a better time. And I hate to start with the negative. However, we kind of have to, because we got to motivate the parents. So what are the risks of screens and technology? Why should we care? Let's get our focus here.
Yes, I'm glad that you shared that, because that is a real risk. And for me, all it's taken is to actually sit across from a screen, just like you and I are doing right now, from a parent who has lost their child to something as simple as an online challenge. And a dear woman shared this experience of where her son did the choking challenge. And it was an innocent thing. He really didn't spend a lot of time on social media. He wasn't necessarily attached to his phone. But at some point, he discovered this choking challenge and went to the bathroom. And, you know, they'll say, okay, there's this high that you're going to get from obviously like losing oxygen for a few minutes, but they don't tell you what the real risks are. And that those are the things that are waiting online for our kids. And I think what was so frustrating is you look at this mom and she's just a regular mom, just like you and I, who cared about her son and was intentional in her parenting. Mm-hmm. And sadly, we can't prepare our kids for every little thing out there. But we really do have to be proactive and have a lot of conversations. So that's one of the risks. Obviously, there are online challenges. There are, as you said, there are actually online predators who are waiting on the other side of screens. So I think the days of a stranger going to the park are long gone. They realize that they can find kids online. Another recent experience is a mom whose son ended up interacting with drug dealers over his phone, mm-hmm. and ended up meeting up with them and ended up taking that something that was laced with drugs. And again, and she lost her son. And these are extreme scenarios, but they happen. And so I think just being aware that, yes, there are people on the other side of the screen. Like when you talk about sex trafficking, specifically like child sex trafficking is a thing. Mm-hmm. And that definitely is started online quite often, where girls might be sharing. I mean, it could be anyone, but quite often it's girls sharing images of themselves that aren't appropriate. And sometimes just seeking attention. And then they get that attention from the wrong places. And, you know, it can lead to a lot of things. And then there's something called sextortion, where someone will get a hold of those images and they will hold them against that person. So they will say, hey, if you tell your mom or dad, you know, I have these images, this is what I'm going to do. And this is, I will share these images. And those things happen. And so again, it's like being proactive and telling our kids, don't ever even take that picture. If the picture isn't taken, it can't be sent. And, but those are some of the risks. And then I think the risks that more parents are probably familiar with are the ones that have been in the news lately. So recently, you know, the Facebook files, they've done some inside investigations in Facebook, and those were leaked and were shared. And they had a whistleblower that actually testified in Congress who worked at Facebook and just shared, hey, we've done some of our own internal research and we found that Instagram can be especially toxic for teen girls. And, you know, as we've seen the rates of suicide and depression and anxiety rise, some of that has been tied to cell phones. And I don't want to say all of it, because I think there are a lot of factors.
Yep.
But just last week, the U.S. Surgeon General issued a statement, an advisory statement, and said, we have a youth mental health crisis. Yep. And this is no longer something we can ignore. And he called out a lot of specific factors, but one of the factors was technology. And so when the U.S. Surgeon General finally has to say, hey, guys, we've got a problem, then we know. So those are a few of the problems. And again, like you said, we don't want to just scare parents, but I think we need to be aware of what's out there. And then we have kids who are just losing their lives to gaming, where the video games really end up becoming their life. And I've also sat across the screen from people who have been in that situation, where they started to not care about anything besides the next, getting to the next level. And, you know, that's obviously not something we want for our kids. So there are a lot of risks and things that we just need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know that every game is created to be addictive. Every social media platform is literally engineered to be addictive. Yes. And even just the phone itself is set up so that it incites things in our brains, right? That pull our attention, that give us those dopamine hits, that keep us coming back. And I say us because adults are included in this.
Yes.
Right. And I mean, gosh, Andrea, even if a kid isn't like losing their whole life and caring about nothing but gaming, if they're spending so many hours on games, watching YouTube, right? These things that are not going to further their lives, even just as simple, like I said, as simple as that, is that really what we want for our kids? Like, I want to raise kids who have passions and have careers and, you know, learn how to raise a family and meet someone they love. And we only have so many hours in a day. We only have so many hours with our kids. So, whew, so many reasons to get this right or as close to right as we can. Yes. But what's your background? I mean, how did you end up being so passionate about this and meeting all these people and hearing these stories?
Yes. Well, I think this started a long time ago when I first became a parent. So my oldest is almost 17. She'll be 17 here shortly. And when she was about two, at the time, my husband was going to grad school at Purdue. And I had a good friend there who was an avid reader. Like, she read everything. I love to read, but she took it to a whole nother level. And I just asked her, I said, what did your parents do to instill this love of reading in you? And she said, oh, we didn't have a TV growing up. And I was like, really? I just got curious. And so I went home and I told Tyler, my husband, I said, what would you think if we just put the TV in the closet and we don't completely get rid of it, but we use it like an appliance and we just pull it out we love the Olympics. So we'd pull it out for like weeks at a time for the Olympics, or we pull it out for family movie night. But for most of the time, it just stays in the closet. And my husband's super practical. He's an engineer and he doesn't love sports. So it was kind of like, sure, let's do it. And it's crazy, Katie, but that little experiment has lasted now, you know, over 15 years, because we actually had a house fire about 2 years ago, and we lost the TV that we had that was in the closet, and we've since just replaced it with a projector. So we don't even have a TV right now, but that's just kind of what we do. So my kids don't think that's strange to pull this projector out. But that being said, we lived that way for a long time, and I loved that. I felt like I could protect my five little kids. But you fast forward years later, and soon my husband and I both had smartphones. And you and I have been parenting probably about the same amount of time. And so you know that when we both first became parents, we didn't have smartphones. We may have had a cell phone of some kind, but we didn't have smartphones. And so I started to see how distracted I was becoming as a parent by this device that I was carrying around in my pocket. I also started to see that the TV was becoming the least of my concerns, that portable devices were everywhere, and that they were starting to show up in the school and at friends' houses. And so I was finally like, I can't just like keep feeling like I'm just protecting my kids. Well, several years ago, about 4 years ago, well, actually, let's see, 5 years ago now, this is crazy. We had a big move from Illinois to Oregon, where we now live, and we handed over a smartphone to my oldest. She was in middle school at the time. And it was just, it wasn't like we went to the store and we were like, let's get the smartphone. It was just a leftover smartphone that we had. And I wanted her to be able to stay in touch with her friends that she left behind, because as you know, moving in middle school, not fun. And then I didn't know anyone in this town. And I was worried, like, will she know where to get off the bus? Can she get a hold of me if she needs to? Because she doesn't know anyone either. And that really was the motivation behind handing that phone over to her. But fast forward a few months later, and she would come home from school and sit down to eat her bowl of cereal, her after school snack. And I would normally have a conversation with her at that point. But instead, she started pulling out this phone and was scrolling. And before I knew it, there were all these apps on the phone. It wasn't just like, oh, we're just texting with this phone. There were apps and all these new things. And I just had this moment where I thought, I have not prepared her for this. And I didn't prepare myself for this. And so we took a step back. We went back to a brick phone. There were lots of tears. It was very painful for all of us. But at that point, I thought, parents need more help. We need more help. And so I was looking for answers, and I just felt like a lot of what was out there was very fear-based. They didn't really give me a positive model of how to, it was like either just hand them the phone and say good luck, or just like don't ever allow them to use any technology and panic. And what I found, and I learned this from Dr. Meg Meeker, but she says that we should parent from a place of confidence and not a place of fear. And so that experience with that smartphone, it was making me parent from a place of fear. And that's not a productive place to parent. And so we started having conversations as a family. We backtracked. We're like, hey, how can we do this better? We started involving our kids. And that's really how Better Screen Time was born.
What a great story. And I feel like you felt like you were giving your daughter a pair of scissors, right? Single use, very functional. And then suddenly it was like this Swiss Army knife of crazy. And you're like, yes. Oh my gosh, it's really sharp. And we didn't know that what we were giving her. I just totally, I'm listening to your story and I'm like, totally. Like
you that just is such don't... a good analogy.
Yes. Maybe I'm emotion too.
Yes.
So, but like we do that as parents. We're like, do. We just make a decision that makes total sense. And then we go, oh my gosh, disaster has arisen.
Yeah.
So good for you to pull back and to go through the tears and not only to create a system that really worked for your family, but then to codify that into a system that can work for all families and all ages. And your work is amazing. I love it. But let's talk about that age thing. Like, what do you recommend? Because I tell you, my daughter and I were in the mall the other day, and I started playing a game in my head to see how many kids were looking at screens. Mm-hmm. In the mall, when they could have been looking around at like the amazing visual stimulation and sensory stimulation of a mall or talking to their parents. And I mean, I saw like probably an 8-year-old walking with his mother's cell phone walking. And I'm like, dude, this kid's going to go down the stairs. There were kids yes. in the strollers with the cell phones. And like my heart started breaking. I had to stop playing the game. So ages and appropriateness, and maybe it's not ages, maybe it's maturity. I would love to hear you just sort of walk through what you recommend to parents for a personal device timeline.
Yeah. So I think it's really important to think about brain development when it comes to this and what kids really need when it comes to development. So when we look at kids like 6 and under, really what do we know as parents? Like we know what they need, right? They need a lot of imaginative play. They need to be able to be creative. They need a lot of time to process emotions, experiences. They're really learning about the world around them. And they're learning how to do like nonverbal cues, like facial expressions, and just really play. Like play is their work. And so if we hand over an iPad to a young child, younger than 6, knowing that on this iPad has been designed to really keep us connected and to keep us hooked. Because these apps that are on the iPad, that's how they're designed. They're games. And even though they might be educational, what I just like to ask parents, like, think of what we just kind of think good, better, best, right? So is maybe an ABC game on the iPad, is that good? Okay, well, maybe it could be if there's a time limit. But what could be better? And what, like, ultimately, it would just be sitting down with some letter magnets and a parent sitting down with the child on the floor and just putting those on the fridge and just doing A, B, C and making a little game out of it. Because so then you're serving a lot of different sensories. You're serving a lot of, you're just helping your child in a variety of ways because they're having to use their fine motor skills to put the magnet letters onto the fridge. So just so, you know, parents think about this, any child can swipe and it's just intuitive and it's not a skill that they need to learn, but being able to manipulate things is a super important skill. Being able to have this relationship and communication with a parent, also super important that they cannot get on an iPad. And then they still can learn. They can still learn things, you know, learning their ABCs or whatever, and maybe learning to cook with their mom or dad. Just those are the kinds of things that they miss out on when they're on a screen. And the other thing that is super important for parents with kids that age to think about is to think about, how do you want your child to just, like, if something goes wrong, how do you want them to self-soothe? How do you want them to learn to really just be able to handle those emotions? And as you've talked to someone like Dr. Dimitri Christakis, he is a leader when it comes to screen time research, especially for young kids. And he's up in Seattle. And one of the things that he talked about that he would see in his doctor's office, as portable screens became mainstream, that parents would come in, the kid would get a shot or, you know, something, they would be upset, and the parent would hand the child a phone to make them feel better. And this is repeatedly happening. And so what happens is then we have this habit loop where then the child is like, okay, I feel bad. So what do I need to do to feel better? I need to turn to a screen. And I think, Katie, the real problem with that is that then we look at years down the road and parents wonder why their teenagers, when they're feeling depressed, why they turn to a screen. It's because we trained them to do that, you know, and that's what is so important. It's like parents will just think, well, it's just like, this is just so much easier. Yeah, it's easier now. In the long run, you're doing a huge disservice to your child and to yourself. Like, you'll regret it. And I don't want any parent out there to feel guilty if they've done that. I think we've all done that before. And sometimes you just end up in a horrible situation, and maybe you hand it over, you're stuck in traffic for an hour, and you've tried all the things and the kid's still crying. Like, that's a different thing. But I think it's just thinking about, what do we do repeatedly? Those are kind of my thoughts for the younger kids, at least.
Today's podcast sponsor is Third Rock Essentials, makers of one of our top favorite sunscreens after personally testing over 125 natural mineral sunscreens. Third Rock has a very unique sunscreen that, when you put it on right by rubbing your hands together, it goes on clear and it lasts all day long. They also make a few other products that we use extensively in the Kimball household, such as their Nutrisporin, a non-toxic neosporin alternative for cuts, scrapes, that's in every bathroom in our house, along with some other silver products that you can take to keep your immune system boosted, keep your family healthy all year long. Check out Third Rock's products at kidscookrealfood.com/thirdrock, that's THIRDROCK, and be sure to use the coupon code KITCHENSTEW for 20% off. So go to kidscookrealfood.com/THIRDROCK, Third Rock, and use the code KITCHENSTEW, KITCHENSTEW, for a big 20% off your order.
But I think it's just thinking about, what do we do repeatedly? Those are kind of my thoughts for the younger kids, at least.
Yeah. And, you know, I have another interview with Dinah Rose, who told the same story, that when her child got some shots at her well checkup, the nurse tried to hand her a sucker. And she said, no, not because she cared a whit about the sugar, which was funny, because I'm like, really? Oh, like, this was a paradigm shift for me. She said, I wanted her to get a hug and to get consoled and soothed by a body. And as soon as she stopped crying, I gave her the sucker. And I was like, again, blew my mind. But
oh, I love that.
Exact same story, exact same. It's the habit loop, right? Yes. So well put. So do you say absolutely no screens under 6, or just very limited time? Or what's your rule there?
Yeah, just limited. And then knowing the difference between the different types of screens. And this is something that I didn't understand, that I feel really strongly about teaching other parents. Because those of us who've been parenting for a long time, touch screens weren't an option when our older kids were young.
Yeah.
So what happened is, around that same time when we got handed that phone over to our oldest, we actually got an iPad. And it was mostly because the kids wanted to make movies together, which I love. And that's great, because they're doing it together and they're being creative, right?
100%.
But what happened is that then, at the time, my youngest was 3. And it just seemed like everyone was kind of pushing it. Like, this is, if you want your kid to be, I don't know, normal, I guess is the best way to put it, like, you will let them play on an iPad. And so it's interesting, because I downloaded some of these apps, like ABC apps and whatever. Yeah. And I just noticed, like, she would play on it for 30 minutes. And like, it was like, I would have to rip that thing out of her hands. It was just like a tech tantrum, literally. Mm. And so I thought, this is not normal. Like when I turned off the TV for my other kids, they might've been upset, but it didn't look like this. Mm. And I actually noticed she was super flushed. Like it almost looked, I don't even know how to explain it, but it just, I could tell that something different was going on. And so as I read, there's a great book called Reset Your Child's Brain by Dr. Victoria Dunkley. And she talks about this difference between interactive screens and then just like this passive screen use. So the type of screens that are touch screens where our kids are interacting, mm-hmm. they actually cause a dopamine spike in the brain. And it is, again, they're like, oh, this feels good. I want to keep doing it. And then when you, if they look at a brain of a child that's just passively watching TV, different experience. So I guess my advice to young parents is just to opt for the TV over like an iPad and opt for, if kids can do it together, that's better. Like together screen time is always better than alone and seclusion. And then just being mindful of what it is, like something that's more slow moving and not super fast paced, that's going to be appropriate for them. And then just have a time limit and then no guilt, because it's okay. Like if you're super tired and you need a nap or whatever it is, and you want to turn on a show for an hour so you can take a nap, then do it. Like a mom's sanity is worth so much, but just being mindful of what type of screen time it is. And again, I used to think the TV was not an awesome thing. And now I'm like, oh, the TV is the better option here.
Yeah. I mean, the brain science fascinates me. I know in our home, when our kids are still in elementary school, they have a rule, no screens at all on weekdays. Because I mean, their time is so short from when they come home to when we start dinner. It's like, you have to choose one thing. Like either you're hanging out with friends, but you know, even if you had a half an hour of screen time, like my kids would choose that. And then they have no time to play with friends. And so that's our limit. And then on the weekends, we might give them a half hour or an hour, and they have to set a timer, like depending on age. So at least I feel a little better. Like hopefully I'm doing the right thing there. But I got to say, what do you recommend for parents on the screen time, like trophy battle? Because when I teach about picky eating and I talk about how important it is not to make the dessert, the trophy that you get after suffering through the broccoli. We do the same thing with screens though, right?
Yeah.
The screen is the trophy you get after suffering through reading a book or doing your homework or doing your chores. And I know that that's not optimal. I have no idea how to fix that problem. Do you?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because I do talk about this, that I don't recommend using screen time as a reward. Uh-huh. Because it gives the screen too much power, right? Yeah. The same as it does for dessert. And we don't want that power struggle. And we don't want to give all this attention to the screen. Like, oh, this is this ultimate reward. And it's so amazing. I like to just think of screen time as like one more part of our week. You know, with our younger kids, it's not even, again, we don't do it every day either with our younger kids. Mm-hmm. My older kids, sadly, I mean, they use screens every day for school. So I can't say no screen time every day, but the time they spend doing other things is also, you know, they have limits. But thinking about rewarding kids, I know when portable screens became mainstream, I would see a lot of these charts floating around. I mean, you'll find them on Pinterest and everywhere of like, okay, if you do A, B, C, D, then you get screen time. And people even would do tickets and different things. And again, I don't recommend that. I think what's best and what's worked for our family is to sit down and create a family tech plan together. And maybe we'll talk more about that, but then deciding ahead of time what that will look like what the time limits are and where screens are used and what you're doing on them. And then just let it be a part of your week or not. If your family decides, you know, you still have little kids and you're like, we're not going to do screens. I love that. You know, I think every family gets to decide what's best for them, but instead just make a family tech plan, but don't make screen time the reward. And of course, like at our house, kids still have to have things done, like chores have to be done if they are going to spend time on a screen. But since it's not a daily thing, I feel good about that, because we're not creating that habit loop of like, okay, I do these things and then I get screen time. Instead, right. It's like, I do these things and today I might go to the park with my friends, or today I might just sit down and read a book, whatever, you know, they choose to do.
Right. I feel like you're just putting things in an order, right? You do your work first and then you recreate.
Yeah.
And the recreation bucket has many things in it. Sometimes it's screens. But yeah, it's admittedly a really tough balance to not, I mean, because we have to limit the screens. We know that sometimes those limits create the stronger desire in the children. But I think what we've already established, though, Andrea, is that the desire is already there.
Yeah.
Right? It's already addicting. And so I think that's good for my brain to hear, because I always think like, gosh, if I create those limits and if I say, oh, I'm tired of you being on screen, you got to get off and go outside, you know, that I'm like making the screen kind of like that dessert, like that desired object, because it's harder to get, but it already is. So we might as well just restrict it.
Yeah. And I hear parents say that they worry that if, obviously, yes, if you are too controlling, then that's one thing, but having limits and boundaries is healthy for our kids. They can't do that themselves because of two reasons. Their brain isn't fully developed, and these apps have been designed to keep them hooked. It's called persuasive design. And again, it's there for all of us on social media or wherever we're using a screen. So those two things alone tell us that kids really can't self-regulate on a screen. And then it does take us as parents to step in and to provide some boundaries. And I think that really the only way our kids would just completely go off the deep end is maybe if we are too controlling and we are just completely limiting and shutting down everything. Mm-hmm. But we know and I'm sure because you teach healthy eating, you know that that's not a healthy approach to anything when it comes to parenting, right?
Like,
but we're providing options.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. Well, I have to say, we started talking about the ages and stages and we only got to age six. So I have made an important decision that we're going to move tweens and teens and smartphones to a second interview, because it's got to be done. It just has to be done. It's so important. However, you just talked about making decisions as a family, and I would love to hear more about what that looks like and how you initiate those conversations with your kids and help kind of create these limits and boundaries, it sounds like, as a family. That's what you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So when I realized that I'd made this mistake with my daughter, I then started to parent more from this place of fear. And I started doing a lot of research and thought, okay, I'm the parent. I need to make some rules. So I did talk to my husband. And I was like, this is what we need to do about the screens. So I made these rules and we sat the kids down. And it was just like glazed looks, shrugging of shoulders, like, wow, mom's really like lost it. Like, why? I think they really couldn't figure out why was I so upset and like, just like laying down the law about screens all of a sudden. And it just did not go over well. And I thought, okay, I used to be a teacher. Is this how I taught? No, this isn't how I taught in the classroom. Like, my teaching philosophy was always that the answers lie within the students themselves. My job is just to draw it out of them and to be a facilitator and a guide. And I do truly believe that. I taught junior high, and even at that age, like, they know a lot. I love our kids and our youth, and they really just need a little bit of guidance. And I thought, okay, then why am I doing that at home? Because I know that doesn't work. So instead I thought, okay, this has to be a collaborative approach. I need to ask the questions, and I also need to start with why. And I love Simon Sinek's concept of starting with why. And of course, he's talking a lot about companies who are, you know, just trying working with companies and how companies are sharing their concepts and ideas that people buy from them, not because of, you know, what they have, but because of why they do it, right? And so it's really the same with our kids when we're talking to them about screens, and they need to understand why we need to be careful, you know, all these things that you and I talked about at the beginning of the interview. So yeah, we started from scratch.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about those digital dangers. Like, so if you have specific phrases or ways that you bring that down to a kid's level, I would love to hear that, because you're right. That is a starting point for all these conversations.
Yeah. Well, what we ended up doing was we did a series of 10 conversations. Well, probably more with our kids because they were the guinea pigs, but I did condense that down to 10 conversations and put that in a discussion guide that we have on Amazon. It's called Creating a Tech Healthy Family, 10 Must Have Conversations to Help You Worry Less and Connect More with Your Kids. And so we do kind of break that down. We talk about cyberbullying and pornography, and we broke it down into these discussions. But where we started was first with just making a thumbs up and a thumbs down list of the things that we liked about technology and the things that we needed to watch out for. And so we just got out a big poster board and we drew a thumbs up. And I'm like, hey, you guys, what do you love about tech? And we made this long list and then we did our thumbs down list. I said, what do we need to watch out for? What do we need to be careful of? And the kids know, like, your kids will know. Anyone listening to this, like your kids, you know, they've been taught a little bit, I'm sure, at home, a little bit at school, and they're aware of some of the dangers that are out there. And it's a great way to start the conversation to see what they already know and maybe where they're lacking. Like, what do they not know? Maybe you've never had a conversation about pornography or about online safety, about not sharing personal information. So it's a great way to see, to kind of gauge what your kids already know, but also to not, right up front, not make tech the bad guy, to just say, like, there are good parts and there are bad parts. And I read this line from Richard and Linda Iyer, who are some of my favorite parenting experts. And they just said, you know, parents can either wring their hands about this technology problem, or they can see this as an opportunity to teach their kids the skill of discernment. And that's really what you're doing in that first discussion, is you're like teaching your kids to be able to tell between, like, this is good, this is bad. And that's where we started. And then that second discussion is where we actually created our family tech plan. And I said, okay, you guys, like, let's just do, like, where are we going to use screens? What are we going to do on them? How long? Who with? Like, just kind of those basic elements of almost a story. And how can we just use that framework to create our plan? And so we decided as a family that we weren't going to take screens into the bedrooms and bathrooms. And this was 4 years ago. And the kids said, well, Mom, you take your screen into the bedroom. And I was like, right, I'm not going to do that anymore. And so it was just like this reality check of how we as parents need to model that. And as your kids get older, this becomes way more apparent, because adolescents hate hypocrisy and they will call you out on it, and they should, because we really do need to model the habits that we want to see. So we really just started to make changes as a family together. And that's where the power comes in, is that kids can see that you're trying, that you're putting your phone down when they've got a question, you're looking them in the eye instead of just like, like scrolling through your phone and passively listening. And so it was good for my husband and I too, to be part of this and just to make these changes together as a family. And it's not like you have the conversation once and everything's fixed, but you have the conversation, write out your plan, put it on the fridge or somewhere where everyone will see it. And that is helpful for your kids. It's healthy because then your kids aren't like, well, Mom, that's not what you said, or this is what you said. And then it's like, well, it's right here. This is what we all decided on together. And if we need to make some adjustments, let's have another family meeting or, you know, family powwow and talk about this, about what changes we need to make. And it's just a great way to get your kids to have buy-in, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to send everyone over to grab that book, Creating a Tech Healthy Family. And I can't remember where I heard this, but someone was asking kids what app they would want to make for their parents. And the kids were like, I would want an app that whenever I talk to them, is shut their phone off so that they would focus on the children. I was like, whoa, insightful.
it really is, actually. Mm-hmm. That's so good. Yeah. Exactly. And I felt like, I think there are some parents that can take this discussion guide and they can run with it. Like, their family is used to having these discussions and their family is maybe just used to working in that setting, or they just have a lot of background knowledge in this topic. But there are a lot of other parents that just need a lot more handholding and help. And so we we created a course called Creating a Tech Healthy Family. And my promise to parents in that course is I will help you reduce screen time, restore family time, and raise kids who thrive. And that's really my goal. And so in that course, I'm going way more into like the research. And here are maybe some TED Talks that you could watch with your kids. And here are some different things that you should do for different ages and stages. Because the book is very basic. Like, it's just, here are the discussions. Mm-hmm. And some people can take that and run with it, but other people just need a lot more. And so that's been awesome to be able to help parents in that way too.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's just latch on to that, like raising kids who thrive, right? That is so what we want. We are living in an era of screens. We are not going to escape them. So how do we raise kids who thrive with and in spite of screens and technology? So yes, if you have loved listening to Andrea as much as I have, then you gotta join the course, right? Or buy the book or both. And Andrea, I always like to leave parents with a very practical step, because this has been a lot in all the best ways. But what would be like the one first step you would recommend to sort of get a quick win and feel like, okay, I've done a good parenting task in the world of tech today?
Yeah, I think just sitting down and having that first discussion with your kids. And you don't even need the book to do that. If you, you know, just get out a big piece of paper. You can even bring out the ice cream if you want to. So this just can feel like a fun thing and not like, a serious thing, but just, hey guys, we just really want to improve how we're using our screens. We want to do better, mostly so that our family can stay close. And so we can have the relationships that we want. So let's talk about like, what are the things that we like about our screens? What are the things that we don't like? And just have that initial conversation. And your kids might even bring things up that they've noticed that maybe kids at school do, or that you do. And, or maybe they'll even open up to some issues that they're having. And I think it's great to have that conversation together as a family, but also one-on-one, especially as your kids get older, having just some one-on-one conversations, like, how do you feel about how you're using your screen? And is there anything that you want to talk to me about? And just, I think just starting the dialogue, that's the best place to start.
Perfect. And we had to definitely do that when the world shut down. And we had a teenager, you know, we weren't doing school online. We were doing nothing, absolutely nothing. And he was spending a lot of solo time on screen. So we have definitely felt that reset moment with our older ones. I am doing this step that you just assigned us as homework. Take it as homework, parents. You got to do it. We have a 2-hour car ride 5 days from now, and that's when I'm going to do it, because they're all trapped.
Yes.
So incentivize with ice cream, one strategy, trap them in a car is another strategy. They can't get away.
True, actually.
So I'm totally doing it. And actually, awesome. I think I'm going to lead with humility too, and just talk about how I have been using social media way too much, way too late at night personally, and how I need their help to rein me in, and let's do this together. So leading with humility, always a good thing. It puts the kids' guards down, right? They feel like they're being helpful. It's not all about like, you have messed up and we're resetting, you know, your screen stuff. It's everyone's. And so we're totally going to do this as a community, you guys. Moment you get, put it in the calendar if you have to. And you have a couple of free gifts too that I wanted to tell people about. 100 screen-free activities. And what is it for
when you feel like doing nothing,
which is when we all grab a screen, isn't it? So 100 ideas, that's fantastic. And then I have to share too, that you have a parent questionnaire called Am I in the Driver's Seat or Is My Phone? And I am feeling a little convicted. Like, I think I might have to go download that free gift and see how badly I score.
Yes. And you'll find both of those on betterscreentime.com.
Awesome. And we'll link to everything we've talked about wherever we share this recording. Goodness, Andrea, you're going to come back in a couple months. We're going to talk about tweens and teens, because I know some parents are feeling unfinished. Those of us who have kids like 10 and up, they're like, wait, I need more. So we're going to give you more. We're going to see you again. But thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you, Katie. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy Parenting Handbook podcast. I hope your brain feels fed and your heart feels full and that you feel connected, knowing that there are other parents on this journey with you. We're just trying to raise healthy, independent adults. And you know, the next time you think, man, there is no handbook for this job, now there is the Healthy Parenting Handbook. Look up the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please leave a review, my friends, as that helps other parents who need this information to find us. And of course, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. That's a huge help. You can also look for our shorts as a reel on Instagram at Katie Kimball Kids Cook, or subscribe to the Healthy Parenting Handbook Shorts channel on YouTube. You'll get those bite-sized portions of healthy parenting advice.